All right, I would like to call this committee of the whole meeting to order for March 6, 2018. May I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Davis is not here. Mrs. Deogracius?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Martyri?
Yes.
Mr. Moore is not here. Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Here.
All right, so the first thing we do is recognize visitors and invite comments from the public. Anthony, anyone signed up? I still recognize some of you anyway. You all look relatively familiar, whether you're visiting or not.
Thanks for coming.
So next, I need an approval of our agenda. Can I get a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Martyri?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. Deogracius?
Yes.
You're doing that. Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. All right, so the first item on the agenda, interestingly enough, has me talking about board governance, but I'm not talking about it. It's going to be Ed talking about this text-to-tip youth crisis hotline resource that was in our package.
Excellent delegation.
I think it was a typo that my name was in there and then
it's called the handbook.
Absolutely. Well, we are excited to share this actually with the board and the community, and my hat is off to Larry and Tina also for their willingness, and social workers at Roosevelt for their willingness to learn about this and hopefully also be a part of how it's implemented. So a little background on this. River Forest District 90 is a part of a regional suicide task force. This task force was formed back in 2016 and comprises a number of kind of organizational members, including NAMI, community mental health boards of both River Forest and Oak Park, Thrive Counseling, the Oak Park Police Department, River Edge Hospital, Congregation of Churches. So kind of an interesting and an eclectic group of folks, obviously all coming together around the concern of suicide in our communities. When this was formed in early 2016, there had been one relatively recent suicide that, well, every suicide is tragic, was particularly well known of an adult who was very active in the communities. And all of these organizations realized that certainly our collective power was much stronger than individually trying to address this issue on our own. So the task force was convened, and in the interim, there's been a great deal of research and looking at best practice around how communities can use an evidence basis to try and mobilize against suicide, providing mental health supports, communicating and collaborating between the organizations, and looking for opportunities, obviously, for intersection. One of the items that has received a lot of very positive review from both a evidence base and also a practical perspective in trying to address suicide ideation for particularly youth is a program that's known by the moniker as Text-to-Tip. While admittedly the group doesn't necessarily love that name, the reality is that young people, particularly in this day and age, have been shown to use texting as their preferred outreach when they need to secure mental health services. And there is a private company that has created a texting program that will allow youth anonymously to text in to interact via text with mental health clinicians, certified clinicians, who are able to provide kind of entry-level triage for individuals that are in crisis. This program, we've done a good bit of research on it. Our school practitioners and administrators have engaged in conversation about it, and of course we talked with other school districts that have utilized the program to try and find, you know, other problems or issues we should be considering putting this in place in River Forest and hopefully also in Oak Park as well. And really all of the research that we've done is that this is a tremendous asset in communities where, obviously, which is every community, young people particularly, are dealing with mental health issues. And in our community, we know from some of the feedback that we've received, particularly the issue of anxiety is a big one. The nice thing about Text-to-Tip is it is not only intended to serve young adults and children with suicidal ideation, but basically any mental health issue they may have. So it could be school anxiety or phobias or, again, you know, depression or potential for self-harm. Any of those things can be addressed through the service. We're excited about being a part of it. It does require some, you know, organizational coordination, obviously, and the goal would be that it could potentially be launched as early as the end of this spring. In a perfect world, the nice thing about that is it would provide access to services for young people over the summer when they don't conventionally have access to social workers and school psychologists. That may be an ambitious timetable, but at the latest, the hope would be to have a rollout ready to go, hit the ground in the fall. Again, both districts 97 and 200 were part of the discussions and are kind of in their own way learning about it and making some decisions about their implementation. We are hoping to do it in concert with them, but District 90 is potentially a little bit further ahead than those two districts in terms of being ready for it. We're a little smaller. We're probably a little bit more nimble on some of the things that would be required. Obviously, parent outreach, communication with our staff members, and then communication with students about the availability of this resource are kind of the most important prerequisites to launching it. But we are really excited about it, and we're excited and I think inspired by the fact that it's community driven. The funding for this has been secured through the Park River Forest Community Foundation, as well as through the townships and NAMI and some other mental health organizations that are throwing in. If it's successful and we were to continue it in subsequent years, for your peace of mind, the cost is really quite nominal when you consider the possible service that it could provide. But we wanted as much as anything to just share this with the board so that you were aware of it. Again, there are some details, obviously, that still have to be sussed out before we launch, whether it's later this spring or at the end of the summer. But particularly in a day and age when we need to provide as many supports as possible to our community members wherever we can and ensure that particularly mental health needs are being addressed, I think this is a great jumping off place. One interesting aside, when individuals call, it's both confidential and anonymous. There are some protocols, as I hope you would expect, where the clinicians do have, in extremely serious situations, the ability to contact law enforcement and obtain access to either IP addresses or phone numbers, if necessary, to do immediate intervention. Under normal circumstances of the call-in or less serious circumstances, really what the clinicians try to do is draw the individual out if the individual wishes to engage and then encourage them to work with local resources. So obviously for D90 students, it would be to reach out to your school social workers so that you can get some help where you are. More to come about how it's implemented. Sadly, there have been some tragic events, obviously, across the country where I think all of us would wish many things, but one of those things would be that more availability was made for people who need outreach, and this is just one of, obviously an arsenal of things that the district needs to do to continue to be supportive of our students.
Well, the challenge is always to balance that need against privacy concerns and how the mechanics work so that you can reach out with enough support while still maintaining the privacy that the kids would need in order to feel that it was a service that they could use.
Well said.
Stacy, do you want to throw in any of this since you're so active with the foundation? Or
no, I mean, I think through the success of All Youth program, I think this is a big one. They're looking at social and emotional well-being of kids and the sense of belonging. It's all a part of that broader program for youth in the community. So I think that's where the funding came from.
Yeah, actually, the Community Foundation gets double credit because it's both the foundation that's, I think, throwing in as well as the Women Leaders in Philanthropy.
Oh, okay, excellent.
So there's two. And the Park River Forest Rotary Club.
Nice.
So there are a lot of community entities there. But the foundation's leadership has been instrumental in so much of the good that's going on in our broader community right now.
Good collaboration.
A lot to be said.
So that'll move us on to Education Committee and Nicole.
Mm-hmm. So Dr. Hawley is going to give us a great presentation on standard-based grading and just talk to us about what that is and why we're looking at making that transition and how it would help the students, the teachers, and the parents just kind of identify where the kids are based on what they're able to do versus on, averaging scores and grades that may not be particularly based on just what the child is capable of.
Thank you for the introduction. I have a presentation partner this evening. Dr. Conan is going to join me and go through standards-based grading tonight. And actually, he is going to lead off for us. And then
So our next slide shows a definition of standards-based grading. I don't know, do you have a clicker or do you have a... That's the best possible
there
one.
We go.
So this is
technology that hardly ever fails.
There you go. This admittedly is a very wordy definition, and it's still in, I guess, technically somewhat draft form. But really what we're trying to do here, you're probably well aware that the Superintendent's Leadership Council is working with the issue of standards-based grading, trying to discern how we might be able to bring this approach to grading to District 90 in a way that really meets our needs. So one of the foundational tasks was for the SLC to talk about what our goal would be in adopting a standards-based grading approach. And again, while this still needs to have a little bit of refinement, you'll see here when you read it that it's really all about providing feedback. It's making sure that we have clear alignment and articulation between what we're assessing and how we're assessing it, and making sure that we're weaving in kind of the important expectations we have for teaching and learning in District 90, including emphasis on whole child and social emotional components.
How about if you just make it standard-based reporting provides a framework to inform teachers, students, and parents of individual student progress relative to clearly articulated learning goals established at each grade level. So get rid of the learning goals and just...
scratch out a few words.
Yeah. I mean, when I was reading through the packet, I reread that sentence like three times. But, huh? It was one of
those
things.
That's exactly what the SLC committee did. Read it a million times and went, those are good suggestions because it does probably benefit from a little bit of shrinking down, but these are really hard to write collaboratively, so.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need a set of fresh eyes.
An elephant is a mouse designed by a committee, I guess.
Half as long. Take it back. Bring it half as long.
So, and the task again was to try and kind of help us get our hands around what it is we're trying to do here and why we're doing it. And so admittedly, there's also going to need to be information moving forward that's targeted to the audiences that are learning about it. That's one of the challenges with standards-based grading, is that it means different things to different people. So there are some purposes that we're trying to achieve here in making this switch. Obviously, alignment is a really important component. We don't probably have the one-to-one alignment right now between our learning goals and the way in which they are assessed and grading is communicated. So that's certainly an area of growth for us. Clarity of learning expectations and bringing them forward to shine a light on them is another really strong advantage of standards-based learning. In other words, you're putting the learning target out front so there's no confusion about what it is the children will be assessed on.
And how, so I liked that when I read through it. So how are parents and teachers, parents and students going to be informed? I'm less concerned about teachers. I know that you're working really well with the faculty on this thing, but how are you going to make this very clear and understandable to parents and students?
So there's really two questions embedded in there. The first would be, as far as the actual document itself, which is, of course, at the end of the road here,
right.
We will be creating a standards-based report card that will specify what those standards are that the children are learning in concert with their evaluation of how they're doing in approaching those goals. But I think much more importantly is kind of the second part of your question, which is how do we communicate specifically with parents and students this transition, this
right.
shift? Because it's a major transition in terms of how parents and, for that matter, kids think about school. One of the concerns we have, and Allison will speak to this in more detail a little bit later, as we're transitioning from the conventional grading system to a standards-based grading system, and is a real impediment, is all of our shared familiarity with the old way of doing things.
Right.
At the end of the day, this could look fancy and, you know, really be well articulated and be perfectly aligned, and yet, if, as the adults, our experiences, well, I need to know where my child stands, and I'm used to seeing that in an A to F span. You know, we've got to acknowledge that's a reality for people. So communication is a big component of this. We'll talk in just a moment, too, about some of the feedback that we've already garnered from different stakeholder groups about what they like and don't like about our current grading systems, and we're going to hopefully include some acknowledgement of that in the subsequent communications we have with families to try.
So, Ed, will it address the leap from fourth grade to fifth grade? Because that transition from the way kids are evaluated in fourth grade, which is not grades, to fifth grade, which is grades, it's challenging for some kids and parents. Will it address that articulation up through middle school as well?
In the end, yes. One of the things we're realizing, without getting too far ahead of myself, is that we very likely will not be able to launch a K-8 standards-based grading system all at one time. Mm-hmm. The reality is that while report cards certainly need probably attention at both the elementary and the middle school level, our middle school teachers are not probably as far along as our elementary teachers in being able to accommodate the shift as quickly and as easily. It's not out of lack of desire or, you know, an unwillingness to, you know, be part of the solution by any means. To the contrary, elementary teachers have had a reporting system that's easier to transition from. Mm-hmm. And frankly, students at the elementary level, kind of in and of itself, are already more attuned to having to meet a certain standard and understand that the learning objective for that day will probably be the degree to which their learning on that standard is measured. Whereas at the middle school, and even more so at high school levels, so much of grading is institutionalized through how grades are assigned, to what work is graded, to the values that are placed on things like extra credit and class participation. And so it's going to take more time at the middle level for us to unwind that.
And the other concern with middle schools is that they feed the high school with information, which puts kids on tracks once they get over there. And so that there has to be enough information to provide those kinds of fits to that more traditional measurement of what success looks like.
And because it is,
that'll be harder.
They're looking at standard-based grading also.
Are they?
So, yeah, they are. So it'll be interesting to, we have an opportunity to do some articulation with them as well as they, if they look at their process. And
well, I would think that would be very helpful.
Yeah, I think, I agree certainly that the junior high and middle school is going to be a bigger transition, a bigger stretch for them. The elementary school, because of the materials we've adopted so far for math and for writing, and we're going to move into reading, is the elementary school teachers are already beginning to use standards to assess the assessments that they have. So the programs are designed in such a way that they surface the standards, and it'll be much more smooth. So. But the junior high will be an issue.
I was going to say, it may not be as difficult as you imagine, because at the medical school right now, that is standard-based grading, and the residency programs are standard-based grading. So this is something that colleges are already doing. It's just that we're just so used to this. So I think once people get, you know.
Well, and I think in this community, people are always thinking about the next step for their children and making sure that they have whatever information is needed to feed them into the best programs
right. In
college that they can possibly access. And
but that's what I'm saying. Medical schools and colleges are doing the same thing.
Okay.
So it's not something that, that it makes
so
it harder for them.
So we will all be speaking the same language.
Right, that may make it harder for the kids to get into these schools or anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is a big movement afoot in education. So, mm-hmm.
Well, it's good to know that we're not.
Well, when you're out and about and networking with other districts, everybody seems to be talking about standards-based grading, though, the devil is always in the details in terms of the communication and the transition and all those mm-hmm. things. But
has it become an issue because of the Common Core discussions, or what was it going to be anyway?
I think equity has surfaced as an issue with grading because partly is that prior to having the Common Core out, grading was a little more arbitrary in terms of done by individual classrooms as opposed to grade levels, looking at things not only across a grade level but vertically from grade to grade and making sure that things really connect, I think.
Well, it seemed to me to be a step forward because one of the things that was mentioned in something I read, and I can't remember exactly where it was in the packet, but the evaluation of kids has traditionally more been comparative.
Yes.
To who else is in the class and what their progress is, as opposed to looking at the specific learning goal and evaluating each child's progress
exactly.
relative to the goal. So it's different.
Yeah, exactly. And I think another thing to think about is as schools move more towards collaborative learning institutions and collaborative learning systems, They're moving away from the independent contracting that more traditional schools did, where teachers were in their own room and they had their own curriculum and they sort of did what they wanted. And when you move to more of a learning system platform, the alignment really becomes central to what a district's doing. And that's a piece of it, too. So I think a lot of school districts, not just River Forest, are moving away from the independent contracting model. We're looking at collaborative systems. And so,
well, I know this aligns with some of the stuff we're trying to do with getting our curriculum.
It does.
Our major areas to line up across grades and across teachers so that the kids are having relatively the same experience.
Consistency and alignment.
No matter who their teacher is.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Do you know why I love serving on this board? Second slide, second bullet point.
15 questions already.
We nailed you with 15 or 20 questions.
Well,
that is why this board
it makes it easier to navigate the rest. So would you please use your clicker? Read the stuff. This slide, and I won't read it to you verbatim, but this slide is the heart of the text that the Superintendent of Leadership Council used, Developing Standards-Based Report Cards by Guskey. It has been a wonderful primer for us as we've gone through and read this as a team and tried to evaluate both the strengths and weaknesses of our current grading system. Bottom line is you are, as I think Barb really well put, you know, you're basically evaluating a child on the degree to which they understand the standard that's been put out in front of them. As long as your teachers are obviously aligned and they're understanding of what those standards are, and the children are part of the process and take ownership in the work and understand the learning target, it is a fantastic way to evaluate how kids are learning and moving forward. But it's different because, as we all know, in many of our experiences as youngsters, we were expected to, you know, show what we knew based upon sometimes an ambiguous target or a pop quiz, or our grade at the end of the quarter was partially determined based upon how, you know, whether or not we brought in markers or Kleenex, or some other extra credit project. And standards-based grading intends to strip all of that away and make those learning targets very clear up front. And then, again, have the child be part of the process in owning their transition to the learning, and then communicating to the parents how the child, you know, did understand those concepts. The other big challenge that's really important is that in most cases, children are on a continuum in learning standard. And so it may be that at the end of first quarter a child is developing in a skill, whereas they may not have been expected to have mastered that skill at the end of first quarter. But it requires parents understanding that that continues in place. And it may not be until the end of the year when a certain standard is fully mastered, or the expectation is that it's mastered, whereas in other standards it might be done earlier on. So the construction of the tool, which again is the very last step of a dozen steps here, the report card, needs to be really thoughtful, but it also needs to be well communicated to families so that the parents know what the purpose of that instrument is and how it's going to be used. So that's really, and of course Allison has already acknowledged the equity component as being an important element as well. So these are some of the major differences between the report cards that we all remember as children and probably largely are in use with our own kids today, and our aspirations for standards-based grading. Teachers will not be in the perfect world once all of this work has unfolded, will not be establishing their own classroom grading systems. While there will be some autonomy that teachers will have in how they move forward in standards-based grading, there will be much, much more uniformity in how teachers have together agreed they will value certain skills and a demonstration of those skills. Accumulation of points or averaging of assessments will start to fall by the wayside. As we all know, there's a huge danger in averages, especially in terms of understanding students' specific understanding of discrete skills and skill sets. So focusing on student understanding and mastery. There will be systems that will be used. Teachers will be a big part of establishing those systems. That's one of the reasons, for what it's worth, that you probably recall this is the transition to standards-based grading. It's actually a four-year process for District 90. We are now coming towards the end of the second year, and for what it's worth, the lion's share of this spring moving into the fall is really dedicated specifically to the issue of developing communications around this, helping to inform people for why we're going to be doing it, what the value is.
Should the board host the town hall forum on this
fall? I think next fall that would be an outstanding idea.
What do you think?
That would be excellent.
Yeah, this is going to be a big one.
I think it is, yeah.
So it does represent some significant changes, and I know Allison's going to speak.
Well, we have some, I'm sorry, you may get to this later, I apologize.
Yeah.
But we have some learning on potential pitfalls of the transition that we've learned, or we could learn from other districts.
Sure. As a board?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. We'd be glad to put something together.
Do we have, are we thinking about professional development to, by grade level, to make sure that teachers are working together as grade level teams to make this, to align it classroom to classroom? I would think teachers would need to talk to each other.
They will need to talk to each other. So right now, we're counting on the teacher leaders that are members of SLC to kind of be out in front with this. We actually, interestingly, in April, at our forthcoming Teacher Institute Day, have a presentation on the subject that's being coordinated right now by those teachers. And as we all know, some of the most effective PD that teachers can get is from their peers. And the people that have been working on this over the course of the last 16 months. But there will be several levels of professional development and actually kind of feedback opportunities for teachers to inform the process, which I think is really important if they're going to have buy-in.
Yeah.
And implement this.
It's a big change.
It's a big change.
It's little change in some ways, but big change in other ways. So, you know, for example, one of the, when we talk about standards-based grade, we talk about equity in grading practices. One of the things that we've already started doing in our professional development sessions that we've done is norming ourselves around what the standards are and then how you assess within a certain standard. So having a student work with you is really important in taking a look. The standards are the standards. They're laid out. They're already mm-hmm. connected to the curriculum. They're already all tied together. They're already visible for us to see, so it's not a question of wrestling with, well, which standard do we use, which one do we not? It's more, how do we take all the standards we have and collapse them? But one of the overarching goals is to reduce the arbitrary nature of grading. So, you know, you look at the research that really is a fundamental basis for this, is there are studies that were done that you give the same piece of work to 100 different teachers, and then to one teacher it's an A, and to another teacher it's a C, to a couple teachers it'll be an F or a D. So, same piece of work, different minds around it with different standards for what you know is acceptable.
What constitutes
exemplary work, right?
What constitutes mastery and success.
Right, and it's part of it is making sure that we're clear, like these are the developmental benchmarks that are expected, and then you can look on the other side of that in terms of how do we, you know, enrich and then how do we support, but we understand that the baseline goal here, the standards are pretty rigorous to begin with in terms of the grade level standards that, you know, the Common Core, which are the Illinois Learning Standards. So part of it is making sure, like, what does it look like? What does it look like when a child has mastered it? And do we have agreement around this? And that's a big part of the training, because when you first start, there isn't always agreement around it. So norming our grading practices together as grade level teams. Mm-hmm. So all of third grade, Lincoln and Willard, sits down together and goes through that. So we're doing that now with math, and we're actually doing it now with writing. So they're getting that practice in to try to reduce that arbitrary piece. And then certainly we want to make sure that all children have the same high quality learning goals as with the independent contracting that you know, goes with traditional grading systems is people make assumptions sometimes about what kids can and cannot do and may change the learning goal for kids, which can potentially put a ceiling on a child's potential, which we never want to see. So we want to make sure that we're all aligned with that as well. Barb, you've mentioned ranking, sorting of students before. Part of the examination at the middle school level, the use of the average, using homework and giving zeros for homework and then putting that into the average and looking at the range of compartments that you can put kids in, is going to be really important to make sure that we're looking at students with evidence based on the goal, as opposed to having all these numbers that maybe get smushed together into a single grade, but you're not clear how that grade can inform next steps or can inform feedback for kids. And so part of it also is being able to use it as a communication tool to students and parents. So here's where the goal is. You are, you know, you're well on your way. You meet here. You've got some work to do here, but let me tell you how I can help you that's really important.
Suppose a kid does get a zero, how would you evaluate that statement?
If
they just didn't do the homework, what information do you have?
So one part they talk about is pulling apart some social emotional piece, but also work ethic piece. Mm-hmm. So the homework might fall under the work ethic piece. So you can have a student that maybe doesn't do any homework, but then maybe aces all the tests. So what are you really grading? Are we grading understanding or are
right.
we grading compliance, which is another
right.
piece to look at too. And if kids really do understand the concept and we're giving them homework that they have decided is, in some cases, the junior high mind, a little cynical, they may think is beneath them. So
mm-hmm.
that's something else to consider too, is what kind of homework are we giving? How do we look at it? And
what's the
value? How is it motivating or demotivating certain
right.
students? So you still want to look at that, but you may not fold it into the grade. You end up with two different pieces of information.
Two different ways to talk about what's
yes,
happening.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, exactly.
Interesting.
And then I think Ed referred to this earlier, is that it also understands that developmentally kids enter into the classroom at different levels. Certainly we see more variation with kids up through third grade because they tend to even out for the most part by the time they get to third grade. But when they come into kindergarten or first grade, they're all over the place. And somebody's reading at the beginning of the year and another kid is reading at the end of the year. And both are developmentally appropriate. So making sure we take that into account so we're not penalizing students for their developmental trajectory sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
As we all know, everybody's different.
Mm-hmm. So Allison, at the elementary level, if I remember correctly, the students are assessed on a range of doesn't meets or exceeds
mm-hmm.
standards, right? But it's different than that, because that's what parents are used to in elementary school.
It's not
here.
That different, actually. It really is right now, and I think one of the reasons why the elementary school teachers are ready to go is they've adopted so many new materials and curriculum that the current report card just doesn't match what they're doing anymore, so
right.
they want to make sure that those are put together.
So the things that you're measuring
so
will be different.
So they'll still have the criteria,
right.
But maybe the way they look at it across, they're trying to align the different columns. So some of the elementary parents may have seen a writing rubric that really talks about, instead of saying doesn't meet, partially meets, it really says not yet, starting to, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You're on your way, you're totally there. So they're talking about what are those increments that we want to assess kids across. So the terminology might be different, the standards will change.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the general format is gonna look familiar.
Okay.
The elementary teachers have made rubrics for their math based on standards that they're starting to share with parents. Some of them probably used it at conferences. So,
it should go a long way, though, towards that situation where the parent currently now receives something that's ambiguous about
mm-hmm.
where their child's really progressing. Moving forward, they'll know that it's specific to this standard on numeracy, or
mm-hmm.
it's specific to this standard on use of punctuation, whatever it is. As opposed to some broad or nebulous,
mm-hmm.
not quite there yet, assessment when parents are like, well, how do I help my child be more successful? And so there should be some value in that too. As Allison mentioned, one of the bigger challenges we will likely have is finding ways to integrate the many, many standards, particularly at the primary level that kids are expected to learn, into a sensible report card where you don't have 73 items,
right.
And yet still has enough level of detail such that as a parent who may or may not have extensive experience
mm-hmm.
to the children's kind of foundational skill development can know, oh, this is something I can look at and help my child
mm-hmm.
be more prepared, be more successful moving forward without a lot of just discernment. It's going to be tricky because we do also want to make sure practically
overwork the point, but I would say with math, it's been helpful, especially in the elementary schools, because parents, when those standards come home, the parents are like, oh, that's what that unit's about. Oh, those are the goals, I see, because they don't necessarily, they don't have experience with some of the ways students are doing math now. Some parents do, but most don't, and so they can see, oh, I see what the point is. The objective was this, this, and this, and this is how they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, math does not look like it did when
no,
I was in school.
No, but when you have the standards laid
not
out.
Not anywhere near.
Yeah,
like
it makes a ton of
like.
Sense, though, when you see what the standard is. You
it
see,
does.
Oh, it is a standard that you must answer this problem at least in two different ways. It's like, oh, I see. That's a standard. Yeah. That's an expectation. I get it. So
right.
I think it's helpful.
When they ask to answer it in base 8, that's when people get a lot of reason. On the first sequence of the 2017-2018 sequence, third bullet down on educating the BOE about best practices, would it be an onerous request for the administration to prepare a short memo summarizing the best practices and citing the sources for the board so that we could read it in a little more depth?
Sure, yeah.
I think that'd be helpful for us, especially going into doing a town hall forum on it. And you know, we're going to be asked these questions. Mm-hmm. I want us to at least understand the research
right.
that's mm-hmm. behind this. And I think that'd be really helpful for us so that we wouldn't have to go through the research, but have a nice,
right.
you know,
like an executive there. Summary.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
And we might be able to adapt that for other purposes.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, if you're going to develop a fact, I mean, it's some of that. Could come out of, you know, this would be a little deeper executive summary that could be turned into shorter stuff.
Okay. A public friendly.
Yes.
Oh, there
public
you go.
Friendly,
book,
yes.
You know,
yes.
fact sheet.
Yes.
Well, and when you're asking for change, articulating what best practices are and where that comes from, what that means, would be helpful.
I would think. There's certainly plenty out there to refer to, so
yeah.
we can make that happen. So really, you know, for us, the first last 2 years at least have been going through the research ourselves and wrapping our heads around it. And then, you know,
sure.
when you first look at all the research, it basically says you need to be clear on your purpose, and that's the number one thing you have to do. So you saw our extensive purpose statement, which is, again, is still in draft form, but it is you want to find the right sweet spot. It needs to be digestible. It needs to be an elevator speech. So we're getting there. But that really has been a large focus of our work. Certainly, the focus groups that we conducted last year with parents, staff, and students was really helpful in terms of surfacing themes, in terms of what do students really appreciate. You know, what surfaces out of those three things is the need for change, but also the need for reassurance that the change is needed, the change is important, and that it's gonna help move our kids along in terms of their growth and achievement in real and important ways. So. Which certainly that's a good vehicle to help us with the FAQ as well, to make sure that we address those issues up front, because if the focus groups have those issues, then I'm assuming they're a microcosm of all the different subgroups. So knowing that in advance will be very helpful, because communication is something we're going to get out in front of. Rolling this out, the SLC has done a very nice job of framing it for themselves, so the rollout plan of professional development is going to be really important. So. You know, we may want to engage with an outside person to come help us with some construction, somebody that can inform us with the pitfalls ahead of time. So if people out there know what the traps are, we'd like to know them too, to make sure we don't step on one. You know, and then certainly the development of any tool, you need to go through some sort of pilot phase. My experience with writing assessments or rubrics or putting all those things together as straightforward as they can be, they always have problems. So it's really, really important that when we first put it together, we test it, and then once you test it, the flaws will come out pretty quickly. So that'll be important before we roll that out to the community, that we do some internal testing. And certainly communicate. We can't do that enough. So it's going to be important for now, you know, for the next 2 years, and certainly making sure that we have criteria to evaluate how it's going and how it's being received, and is the tool doing what we want it to do, is going to be really important. And ongoing training will be really important as well. So we have a lot to do. It's exciting. So to date, Ed and I both mentioned that we did our best practices research for grading. We did our focus groups with parents, staff, and students. Certainly the curriculum work is key to this. One of the difficult pieces will be is that the content areas that have gone through their reviews already are prepared to do this work, and the content areas that have not may not have similar materials, and so going through, everybody's got standards. So part of it is again coming on and being able to know ourselves. Not everybody's got standards, but not everybody has common materials. So there's probably some horizontal and vertical line of work we have to do with that. So our priority has certainly been math, writing, right now it's, we're looking at reading and social studies, so we'll get to science. But not everybody is going to be in the same place at the same time when we put this together. And then finally, we developed our purpose, which is something. And then next up, so we are going to have an opportunity at our April school improvement meeting on the 27th. We have 3 hours in the afternoon. A portion of that will go to sharing our overview of standards-based grading, the SLCs, in the middle of putting that presentation together. We'll initiate our communication rollout, develop some FAQs. Right now, for the spring, this is really planning for next year, is determining any outside consultant or support that we need, and then we can begin reviewing model of progress that are out there. And I would like to say, I don't like the shade of green. It looks great on the laptop.
Yeah, it looks great on the,
it's terrible, so I'm sorry you had to look at that in the last 20 minutes. I will not be using this color again.
The peas I have for
you. Yeah, no,
I thought it was nice. You
did
like an early St. Patrick's Day kind of thing going on.
Yeah, English peas.
You're a glass half full.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for speaking
too
to
bright.
This
too bright.
And your leadership on it specifically. I know Dave has also brought a lot of expertise to the discussion from an elementary perspective, and that's been appreciated. So thank you for that. And our teachers, fabulous SLC.
Your leadership on everything else, and you've got a lot of balls in the air at this point.
But it's all good, and wonderful teams, and everybody's really committed to the work, so it's been a pleasure.
It's a really positive direction. I mean, even at the elementary level, there's that need to strive for the exceed standards, because it just seems like that's the best grade, even though it's not a grade. And there are some teachers who say, oh, I never like to give exceeds because everybody can't be exceeding. So it takes that psychology out of it, which is, I think, really important.
Yeah. And we've had those discussions, especially when we're putting together the math rubrics, and really it's about, you really want to make sure it's depth too, and the kids are really exploring more deeply.
And taking that comparative piece out.
Yeah. Because I think as we're learning through our UDL initiative, there's no such thing as an average learner.
Right.
We are all different.
Right.
And so to rank and sort and stack us, you know, in different ways really is detrimental to kids that don't fit the conventional mold, but there's no such thing as a conventional mold.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time to toss the mold.
Nice work.
Ed, action items.
So that just brings us forward to the participation agreement with the River Forest Community Center for us to continue with the blended preschool program. You know, I Karen unfortunately is not in the room tonight, but speaking of leadership, the work that she did last spring getting this off the ground and then what she's brought to the development of this program this year has been extraordinary. And feedback that we've received from the teachers who are collaborating on it, from the D90 side as well as RFCC, the parents of the children who are participating, it's really been extraordinary. So we're very excited about implementing again in the coming year. We did want to obviously go through the agreement with the fine-tooth comb just to make sure that if there are any changes that either the RFCC or District 90 thought we would want to make, we did that. There were some very small verbiage changes that address some unanticipated things from this year, such as making sure that professional development is being provided, obviously, for both D90 and the RFCC teacher, that they have some shared decision-making capacity about classroom instruction. You'll see a couple of those types of things are inserted a little bit more explicitly in here, but the agreement is very largely what it was when it was brought forward to. So I'm prepared to answer any questions about it you might have. If not, you know, our request would be to consider approving it. But I don't know if you had questions or if you would wish to have this brought back to you at a subsequent meeting for some reason.
Just two little questions.
Sure.
And so on page 5 of the contract.
Okay. So that's 19 in your board packet.
19 in the board packet.
Right.
Subline F, subsection F. That's a really weak standard. So if they're idiots with their own confidential information, they could be idiots with ours, is basically that standard. It's not an objective standard. So normally what I see in a confidentiality agreement, and I apologize, used to be head of the IP department in my old law firm, so it's an area I worked in, is that they will at least maintain it up to standard practice, what's acceptable in the industry. I'm just saying that that is a very weak standard, that you'll maintain the confidentiality the same way you maintain your own. So if your own is lousy, they've met the standard. And the only other thing I noticed, Ed, is in paragraph 8 on these visiting students, and maybe I just didn't see it. I didn't see where these visiting students would be going through any kind of criminal background check.
I had the same question, yeah.
That was going to be inserted.
And I, off the top of my head, I can't remember where acknowledgement is for that, because there is background check language.
For everybody else.
I'll have to look.
Right, I noticed the same thing, especially the college students.
Yeah, so, I mean, and so maybe that those are, and you could even do those in an addendum to the agreement or whatever, whatever, but I wouldn't mind having the standard cleaned up on confidentiality to at least be up to industry standards. And I'd like some assurance that these people went through the same kind of criminal background check.
Okay. Regarding the first item.
Judy, did you have something too?
So I guess I just want clarification. Okay. Are you going to ask them to adhere to D90 confidentiality standards, or what kind of standard are you going to?
Well, so it's a complex item, and I'll probably want to look at, I'm just speaking off the cuff here, so don't hold me to it. But as far as the, are we talking about the first element, the confidentiality? Okay, so my question.
What it would be, it'd be at an objective standard. So basically the law imposes a number of confidentiality obligations on institutions of education what's the technical term? I forget that people get access to it. They are called.
It would be a contractor.
Yeah, contractor. Whatever. Provider. Remember, went through all this stuff. And so all I would want their standard to be is not a subjective standard, but objective, that they will maintain the confidentiality of our student information, at least in accordance with reasonable industry standards, period.
Okay.
Very objective. So they're basically held to the same standard a school would be held to.
Does the language in A and B, however, bolster that?
It says what they won't do, but then they say they agree to maintain using at least the degree in care and security. So, I mean, they kind of conflict a little.
They've got to comply with law, and then B, it specifies what those.
Yeah, they
got to
comply with law, great.
FERPA, student privacy.
And then they'll maintain this confidentiality using at least the degree and care of security that they use to maintain their own.
Okay. So that really, it might be an issue of removing Section B.
Yeah. No, Section F.
Oh, I'm sorry, Section F. Yeah. And then just having A and B control.
I'd be okay with that.
Okay. All right, so we will definitely take care of that.
Would your staff be trained or advised of this?
You mean of the River Forest Community Center?
Right.
I would assume so.
Okay.
But now, if obviously the expectation is stipulated in the intergovernmental agreement, that puts the responsibility for doing so on RFCC.
Okay.
And their directors. But I would, to answer the question, I would assume so.
Yes. It's just such a hot area right now, and parents are very concerned about it. And I just, you know.
It's just too easy for something to happen, and then why wasn't this in place?
Right.
Right.
That's exactly right. This is preventative medicine.
Okay, and then in Section 8, it was, and this is where, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be ambiguous. This is where I feel like it is tricky, because I probably need to know a little bit more about the expectations that RFCC has with Triton and with OPRF.
Mm-hmm.
So conventionally, but of course we can't assume, both of those organizations also have legal responsibilities for background checks, Triton and OPRF, if they're sending either employees or student observers out to other organizations. But unless it specifies this here, we're assuming or leaving it to chance that that's been taken care of.
For high school students, though, I don't know if that we're allowed to do are we allowed to do background checks on high school students?
I don't think we are on minors.
I don't think so. They have to be over 18.
They have to be over
18. This is children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think you can do that on. You can do it on somebody over 18, but you can't do it on.
Yeah, if they
well,
happen
have
to be.
Do it on
have to do
over
it.
So maybe
over 18.
That should that be organized into two different categories then?
Well, so not to get into the weeds tonight, but there are individuals on site from OPRF at RFCC that are no longer minors. Many of them are special needs students, but I also don't know the degree to which within the same building. There are programs OPRF hosts over there. So
but just get a clarification out of it. I don't think those students would be considered visitors because they have their own section that they're in. They're not within like the
so they're not interacting with the kids
no,
in this
No, they're
program.
In their own section over there. Yeah.
Let's get more information on it.
Let's just get more information and then resolve it one way or the other. And then,
I don't think there's any issues.
Yeah,
yeah,
there's no issue. There's no issues with the board with approving the basic agreement, right? It's just
no,
to get these couple of things cleared up.
Just these couple of little tweaks, yeah. I think.
And then,
no problem.
Thanks, Ed.
Thanks for your attention to the tailoring. We'll bring it back at March 19th.
So we're just passing on the action item.
Yes. Although, the personnel item is something we still need.
No, no, just this
right.
action.
Yes, just on
that
this
one. Yeah.
So, Rich is not with us tonight, and the item that's actually before you is a request from an employee based upon their current health situation to extend the FMLA. Obviously, doctor certification has been extended on that.
And that's consistent with our personnel policies.
Yes, absolutely. And with the time available to the FMLA days, these days that are being requested are available to her and are in compliance with FMLA guidelines.
So there's no reason to say no, so we should just approve. So on that one, I think we need a motion to approve.
So moved. Second.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey.
Yes.
Mr. Martiri.
Yes.
Dr. Thompson.
Yes.
Ms. Williams.
Yes.
Ruby.
Perfect.
And on that, I just need the most important motion of the evening.
Move to adjourn.
Seconds.
All in favor?
Aye.
55 minutes.